brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Rep Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Soft Rep Radio, on time, on target. I'm away this week, guys, so here's what I put together for this show, which is pretty cool. Last year, we did an interview with CJ Ramon, and we used half of that on Soft Rep Radio. You might remember it from the episode with James Powell. And then we did another half for the Power of Thought podcast. But I figured, why not have the interview in its entirety for the first time? So that's exactly what this is, the interview that we did with CJ Ramon. Brandon Webb is here with me for this one. And for those who don't know CJ, not only the bass player for the legendary Ramones, also an all-around great guy, and a former Marine who all of us have become great friends with. So on here, he talks about ramping up for a UK tour, just got finished with a tour with the Aquabats at the time. And he talks about how running out of time is his biggest fear. And also his first shows that he ever played with the Ramones, replacing the legendary Dee Dee Ramone. And of course, rest in peace to the late, great Dee Dee Ramone. Before we get into it, here's what we have going on at Hurricane. We have the Crate Club, crateclub.us. It's a box for men, by men, curated to you by the guys at the site, like Scott Whitner, Brandon Webb, and all those guys. Crateclub.us. We have different tiers of membership. Hanukkah just ended as you're hearing this, but we're ramping up for Christmas. So if you're looking to get a Christmas gift, crateclub.us for that dude in your life. And also, of course, if you're a dog owner, check out kuna.dog. That's C-U-N-A.D-O-G. We have a monthly box for your dog of healthy treats and training aids. It promotes an active lifestyle for your dog and just having a great time with your dog, no matter what type of dog that you have. So check that out at kuna.dog, C-U-N-A.D-O-G. Without further ado, here is the great CJ Ramon. On the show for the first time, a guy we've wanted to have on for a while. Hopefully we'll get him in studio soon, but I know you're always all over the place, man. CJ Ramon, most known as being the bassist for the Ramones from 1989 to 1996, but now does his own solo work. Former Marine as well, which is kind of how we connected with him, of course, also just mutual friend of Andrew Wilkow's. And so you're about to tour the UK, so it's great to finally have you on, man.
Yeah, you caught me at a good time. We just finished up 5 weeks in Europe, and then we landed at JFK. One of our crew guys showed up at the airport with our van packed with gear. We got right in the van at JFK and started 2 weeks through the States with a great band called the Aquabats, and finished that up about a week and a half ago. And now we're taking off on the 23rd for the UK, so I'm right in between.
Weren't you also, I saw, because you and I follow each other on social media, but you were up at your dad's, and then you got the phone call and had to literally pack up and go.
On those East Coast dates, we had a day off between Boston and Montreal. So I said to the guys, I said, hey, let's stop and see my old man. He lives up in Maine, retired up there about 10 years ago. My mom fell and broke a hip recently, so my old man's just been hanging around the house on his own. And he lives in a beautiful spot right on a lake, right on Lake Marinacook. And so we stopped up there to see him. And it turned out the other band had nothing to do that day, so we threw a big barbecue at his house. Alcohol was flowing. We went down by the beach there at the lake. We had a good time. And got up the next morning to leave. I said to my old man, I said, "Hey, why don't you jump in the van and come with us?" So he came out with us for the last couple of shows. We drove back to New York afterwards. He spent a week here. I drove him home. Yeah, it's 7 hours to his place, 8 hours. Just as we walked in the door, I got a friend, call from a friend of mine in Panama, who's a promoter over there. He does organizes a festival for Budweiser every year. And he called me up and said, "Hey, our headliner dropped out for the festival. The show is tomorrow. Do you think you can get on a plane and make it to Panama?" And I said to him, "Yeah, sure. What the heck?" So I got back in the car, drove the 7-8 hours back to New York, got home, packed my bag, threw my bag and my bass in the car, drove over to Newark Airport, jumped on a plane, flew to Panama, got off the plane, had dinner, had a couple of mojitos, got on stage, played the show, came off stage, packed my bag up, went back to the airport, got on a plane and flew home. So it was pretty wild 2 days there.
Oh, man, Panama is still on my list. I want to get down. I've been to Colombia, but I'd love to get down to Panama and just see more of South America in general.
Oh, yeah, it's really, I tell you what, it's in Latin America, Panama City is probably the most beautiful city. It's unbelievably gorgeous, real modern, you know, not hard to find good food. It's easy to get around. It's a really nice place.
I'm sure the ladies are smoke show too.
Hon, if you're listening, I apologize, but yeah, it's pretty. They ain't lacking in good looking girls either.
Yeah,
both of you guys got in on Cuba pretty early too. I know that you visited just probably a few months before Brandon did.
Yeah, we September. I think that was 2015. We got in there. We got contact. You know. Cuba gets a lot of their music through South America. So the Ramones are huge down in South America. So the head of the cultural department over there happened to be a Ramones fan. And he reached out through a mutual friend in Argentina. And they said, "Hey, you know, we can offer you a cultural exchange. We'll get you set up with a, you know, hotel room and a van and somebody to show you around the city. And we set up a couple of shows for you." So I had been trying to get to Cuba, trying to figure out a legal way of doing it and was having no luck. So I was pretty excited. I'm a huge Hemingway fan. I grew up, read everything by Hemingway from when I was pretty young. So I always had a bit of a fascination with the place. So we actually did a fundraising, you know, a crowdfunding campaign online to raise the money for the flights and all the costs of getting our gear there and everything. And it worked out pretty good. So we got to get over there and do a couple of shows. It's pretty neat. Pretty neat. You know, it's funny too, because I've been to Cuba and I've been to Moscow and St. Petersburg. And I was talking with my kids one night and it got to be a little bit of a joke. I said, you know, back in the 80s, the only way I would have seen Havana or Moscow would have been at fixed bayonets, you know? That would have been the only way I would have knocked on those doors. But I said, you know, in my lifetime, it's pretty cool that it went from that to me being able to go over there and play music for people. So that's pretty neat.
Did you get to the Hemingway house?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, of course I did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I did the same thing. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep. And I've been to the one in Key West too.
Yeah, I have. I've been to that one as well. I'm a Hemingway fan also.
All right.
So, hey, I want to ask, what's the craziest show you've ever played or craziest experience you had on tour?
We did, you know, the last Ramon show was a pretty wild one. We played in LA at the Palace.
Yep.
During that show, you know, like we had the guys from Rancid came up on stage and played with us. We had Lemmy from Motorhead came up and played with us. The guys from Soundgarden jumped up and played with us. We had like a whole list of like all the biggest artists from the 90s, you know? And that was probably like, as far as star quality goes. That was probably the wildest event I've done. But we did other great stuff too. We played with U2 for two shows in Spain. We did in South America. We did our last show there was a soccer stadium, 45,000 or 50,000 people, something like that. So. But yeah, I've seen some big bad shows, man. Some really, really high end stuff. But you know, to me, the ones I always liked the best were the ones where we played in smaller places where the crowds were just insane, and you know, it was the energy level in the room is just unbelievable. It's kind of neat at those big shows. You look out, there's people as far as you can see. It's impressive, you know. But there's nothing like being in a small room where you can smell the alcohol on people's breath. They're right in front of you. The energy in the room is just unbelievable. It's really, it really gives you a charge. It really gets you motivated.
That's cool. I don't know if you ever played with NoFX, but I got into just an epic argument. My friend John and John Bush, who's been on the show before, he was a photographer for Rolling Stone and was a bartender in East Village and started a bunch of bars and restaurants. Now he's got his empire going, but he is close friends with Fat Mike, and man,
yeah,
he was, he found out I was former military, and he's like, who'd you vote for in the election? Oh. I bet you voted for Trump. You're such a fucking asshole. And I was like, time out, dude. Like, I just met you and you're a fucking asshole. We just got into it. And then he eventually apologized to me. But
I had the same conversation with him, brother. He called me up and I had taken my son to the Trump inauguration.
Yep.
And a picture of it went up online. And I got a phone call from him, and he's like, did you vote for Trump? And blah, blah. And I told him, I said, because I did not. I said, I did not vote for Trump. I didn't tell him that I hand wrote in Jim Mattis either. But, I didn't vote for Trump. He's not my guy. But he was like, well, you know, there's pictures of you up on there. He's like, you know, at my label, we don't want to see that kind of stuff going up. And I was like, hey, I get it, it's your label. I said, but you're barking at the wrong guy. Well, I didn't vote for him. But yeah, he's hardcore anti-Trump,
yeah.
But you know, the thing is, the punk rock scene in general, it mostly comes from that side of the fence. It's, you know, in general, it's mostly like very, very left-leaning. But you know, over here on the East Coast, especially in New York, it really wasn't about politics and stuff like that. It was about people who did things their own way. That's what punk rock was about. You know what I mean? It wasn't about, you know,
anti-establishment political in general. Yep. That's what I was. Yep,
it was just
when he was just all about the Democratic Party and the political process.
Yeah. I'm like,
dude, that's not punk rock. Not what I grew up with anyway.
Right.
But that is definitely
California's always been on the left side of things out there, or even going all the way back, Black Flag and all the earliest punk bands. So I had the same conversation with Mike.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it got heated, man. I thought we were gonna throw down for a minute there, but then he, to his credit, he was like, "Look, you know, I apologize. You're right." And
right.
I just said, my whole thing was, look, if we can't sit down and have a conversation and our opinions differ and have a civil conversation and debate, I was like, that's the problem in this fucking country right now is everyone's screaming at each other. Like, let's talk and share a different perspective. And maybe, you know, you change your opinion, I change mine, and we see things from different point of view. And it was actually, I forget that commercial, I think it was a Heineken commercial where they basically show these videos of, like, there's a guy on there saying how anti-gay he is, and he's just going on a rant. And then there's someone, you know, on the political spectrum, and it's all these people with these opposite ideas. And then what they did was they paired them up for this Heineken challenge, and they had to tackle this problem together. And then when they finished, they were like high-fiving each other. And then they sat down when they were done and they showed him the video. And it was like, so there's like a black girl and this guy, and maybe the guy was talking about affirmative action or something like that, but right. they showed the videos and then they got really uncomfortable. And then it just yeah. said, look, you have a decision. You can crack open a beer and put aside your differences and get to know each other, or you can leave the room. And yeah. And it was just like really cool project that they did, you know. And of course, you know, they were like, "Fuck it, let's have a beer and shoot of the course. Shit." Which I, that to me is what it's all about and what this country should yep. be about. But anyway,
absolutely,
the free Heineken and, plug. Know, fuck Heineken for not advertising yeah. on our show.
yeah, that's a big joke about being in the military too, right? You're yeah. working with people that chances are before in your everyday life, if you're hanging out with your buddies, you might not have wanted to have anything to do with, but you get into the military and you ain't got a choice. They ain't no way around it.
Yeah.
Whether you like that guy next to you or not, you're going to get the job done with him. So that's
exactly.
And that you're absolutely right. That's what the country was built on. You know what I mean? And in fact, it's one of our strengths too. It's how we keep things balanced and make sure that everybody's got the room to do what they want to do. As long as they're not dancing on somebody else's shoes, it should all be good. But yeah, it just seems really weird right now how polarized and how everyone's just like in lockstep with what their party does, or, you know, what their group says should be right. And it's everybody trying to tell everybody else how they should be living their lives and what you should respect and what you shouldn't respect. So
yeah, it's me, like this. It's like everyone's paralyzed and afraid to even say anything. And I did an interview the other day and it was said, look, I'm not afraid to be a man. Like, there's this whole feminism movement, which, look, I am all about equal women being equal. But the problem is that feminism movement has been hijacked by a bunch of feminazis. And yeah. It's a female world. Females are the future. You know, right. I'm like, look, yeah, maybe in the movie Wonder Woman that exists, but, you know, we all have to get along, like trying existing on your own without right. mating with males. But the whole thing right. is, like, it's okay to be a man. You know, it's okay to drink right. beer, smoke a cigar, open a door for right. a lady. Like, it's just, and there's this whole, like, pussification and demasculinization of men. Especially, I see it probably more so in New York, but
yeah.
Anyway,
I'll tell you, I just came back from Europe and I was shocked at, you know, they've had like a real far-reaching revolution over there, social revolution over there on people's roles in society and what's acceptable and what's not. And it's it was shocking to me how much it's changed over there, people's attitudes in general. And you know, I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. I'm not trying to judge it at all. But the you know, exactly what you're saying. Like they've almost flipped roles. It's almost like they're attempting to turn everything on its head to bring about change. And, you know, for me, as you know, my time on the planet anyway, what I've learned is that things that change slowly usually change for good. Things that you try to change quickly, like it's like with any revolution that happens through violence, you're going to have a counter revolution at some point, because now you set the bar for what it takes to change things.
Yeah.
And you know, in my opinion, if that's what we continue to do, if we don't learn from the past, that's one great thing about being a student of history. If you've studied warfare and all that stuff, is you kind of see and understand the things that work and the things that don't work. And the things that work are the changes that come around gradually, where people's minds get changed over a long period of time rather than trying to force it down their throat, because there's no pushback.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a change in consciousness, not a change in the way they live from day to day. It's a change in consciousness. And that's the kind of change that lasts. When they, just like with the China, with the communist revolutions and all that, they can, they held on to things for a while, but in the end, you know, the biggest ones anyway, except for China and North Korea, pretty much they all fail because it's human nature to want to do better for yourself, to want to work harder, to have more things and take better care of your family and stuff. And that's a hard thing to fight. You know, it's a hard thing to fight human nature.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what slowly happened in Ukraine with that revolution of dignity. It's just, you know, they got a taste of it. And there was a whole promise of joining the, potentially joining the EU. And then they tried to crack down and those young kids just rose up.
And Czechoslovakia too. They had a peaceful revolution, you know.
They just
kind of like, hey, look, this is what we want, you know. We're just going to remember to do it, and they got it. They made it happen.
Yeah. So CJ, really interested. You know, as I'm starting this new podcast, The Power of Thought, and just dealing with a lot of people's fear and overcoming adversity. And just wondering, like, how, like, your personal experience performing in front of a live audience, and you know, is there any issues that you had to overcome being a live performer and in front of a crowd that you can share with people, and so they can maybe help them deal with their own fear of public speaking or talking in front of a crowd?
Sure. Yeah. No problem. I would just tell a story.
Yeah, I would love it.
Okay. So the the leap from going from playing in club bands and whatnot, and then moving into playing with the Ramones, where we played, you know, in front of crowds, 45,000, even some even bigger than that. I mean, we really played a wide range of audiences, anywhere from 500 to, you know, like I said, 45,000 and higher. It was kind of a trial by fire for me because I had no experience in playing in front of a crowd more than a couple of hundred, and definitely, the expectation from the crowd was nowhere as near as what it was for the Ramones. And because I was such a huge Ramones fan, it was not going to happen that I was going to get up on stage and not be 100% completely prepared. So, you have to keep in mind too, when I got into the band, I only had 5 weeks in between when I got out of the Marine Corps and when I did my first, show with the band. So I had 5 weeks to learn 40 songs and 5 weeks to the day I did my first show. So, I just developed a method really for practicing and preparing that really helped kind of push a lot of the fear to the side. And that was just a really strong, practice schedule, a really intense practice schedule. I literally lived in my room for 5 weeks straight and did nothing but play bass. And when I wasn't playing my bass, I had it in my hands. I ate dinners sitting down with my bass. I even slept. I had read somewhere that Jimi Hendrix slept with his guitar because he felt like it helped him connect with his guitar. I slept with my bass in my bed. I used to lay on my back, and just like you're doing boot camp, sleep with your rifle and portals. That's how I slept with my bass.
Wow.
And I'm not joking. That kind of preparation really set me up for a good first experience. Now, the night of the show, of course, the first show, I'm standing in the wings and I'm trying to go over in my head everything that I've done. The trick with Ramon songs is that a lot of them are so similar. At practices, I would be playing like the verse from one song and break into the chorus of another one because some of them are structured so closely that it's your mind just kind of, they all kind of bleed into one song at some point.
Yeah.
But I really had to like go over in my head before we went on stage and try to like separate each songs. And if you've ever seen a Ramones concert or watched one, the songs go one right into another. Every time a song stops, I would have to count off 1, 2, 3, 4, and we would start into the next one. So even separating the songs was difficult once the set started rolling. But practicing the way I did and the rehearsal schedule we kept with the Ramones technically prepared me for it. Mentally, it's really a whole other thing. Mentally, there was no way for me to prepare for being a Ramone and stepping on stage and taking the place of one of the most legendary bass players and songwriters in punk rock and rock and roll history. There was no way I could prepare for that. I was a Dee Dee fan. When I heard Dee Dee left the band, I said to my buddy, we were riding in a car together. I turned to him and I said, I'll never go to another Ramones show because it ain't the Ramones or that Dee Dee.
Yeah.
And those words just rang in my head like it's standing there. But the best way for me to describe the mental state that I was in before we went on stage was just, I just had to let everything go. I just had to let it go. I knew I couldn't go out on stage with all these worries and all these fears in my head. And I had a lot of them. I really did. It was a scary, scary situation. You know, we had the good, the bad, and the ugly, that theme that played before on stage. And I had been to so many Ramones shows. As soon as I heard that start, I got butterflies, like, forget it. Yeah. And, but I stood there and Johnny looked at me and he said, and he looked me right in my eyes and he said to me, are you ready to go? And I just smiled and I said, I'm ready. And I just had to let it go. I just had to let it go. And because at that point there was nothing I could do. I had practiced as much as I could. I had, you know, rehearsed with the band as much as I could. I lived, ate, slept everything with my bass that whole time. And I felt like, If I'm not ready right now, I'm never going to be ready. And that's pretty much how I stepped out on stage. And let me tell you, it was not a graceful 100%, you know, perfectly played set. I got hit with boots, bottles, handfuls of coins. I was so covered with spit at the end of the set. When we walked off for the encore, I pulled my shirt off because I just smelled like mucus so bad. So not only did I have to, you know, just kind of let everything go and fall back on my training. But I had to, you know, I had to fight all of that stuff at the same time. And I had people right up front holding up a sign that said, we want Dee Dee, and cursing at me and everything else. And is it okay to drop the F bomb?
Oh yeah.
I can curse on here.
Oh yeah. Boy.
I had this girl sitting on her boyfriend's shoulders right in front of me, giving me the finger the whole time, holding up a sign that said, we want Dee Dee. I walked out to the end of the stage. I was like, fuck you. I fucked the queen in the ass, and just giving it right back to them. And at one point I got so pissed off, I walked back to my amp. I grabbed the water bottle off the top of my amp and hit this girl right in the chest and knocked her off her boyfriend's shoulders. He turned around and looked at the stage and put both his fists in the air and was like, yeah. And at that point I realized like I was winning the crowd over because I didn't stay at the back and hunker down all scared. I went right out to the end of the stage, took everything they threw at me and still played decent and got through the set. And that's how it went. That was the first one. And it was kind of a repeat of that every night for the first year, every time we went to a new territory, it getting pummeled with stuff and spit on. But it's like anything else, once you go through it once and you know what to expect, there's no more fear in it. So,
yeah. And that's something that hit me just listening to your story. And I've seen it when I was a sniper instructor. We would do these 5-hour stalking exercises and, you know, and we'd have two instructors observing that the students were sneaking up on, trying to get within 200 meters and set up for a shot. And we'd have walkers in the field. And when I remember being a walker and you have this fluorescent orange hat and a radio and the observers, instructors, if they see something, they use you as a walker in the field to you know, bust a student who's not camouflaged properly or using his concealment. And I would see these guys, they would get up to the 200 meter zone they'd be there first, and they would spend hours and hours just prepping and prepping, and they could not let go and take that shot. They could commit to taking the shot. And it's where I think a lot of people get stuck in life is, you know, they're preparing. Oh, now's not the time. This doesn't feel right, or it's not good enough. I need to prepare more. And eventually you got to just fucking let go. And once you let go, you feel what it's like, and then you kind of get better and adjust. And but you have to let go, or else you're just never going to move forward.
Yep, it's like having buck fever, you know. And the worst thing about it is opportunity, real serious opportunity, comes up so rarely in life. Opportunity is really a rare thing. If you're the average person, if you're somebody that understands that and you're making your own opportunities, you're getting out there and making your own opportunities, that's a different thing. But for the average person or younger person who's just kind of coming into the world, kind of just finding themselves, they usually blow a lot of opportunity because they feel that they're not ready. They feel that they're not prepared enough. No, even if they are, or they're just not willing to take a chance. And that's something that I try to tell everybody I know, friends that have wanted to get businesses started, or friends that have just wanted to make a big move in their life. I always tell them, I'm like, you've already made up your mind. You want to do it. Stop thinking that you're prepping. You've already made up your mind. That's it. If your mind is made up, you have to just go for it. Because the longer you put it off and the longer you say, well, after this happens, well, after that happens, what you're doing is you're creating a cycle, a repetitive cycle that you're not going to break out of. Because every time you feel uncomfortable, you're going to fall back into that cycle. And that's a really dangerous thing, because that's the kind of thing that can keep you from doing anything. And not only will it keep you from doing big things, but if you let that cycle continue, it'll even keep you from making smaller decisions. And then you're in that kind of weird spot where you're paralyzed. It's like my wife calls it paralysis by analysis.
Yep, exactly.
You know, you're constantly looking at the problem and trying to figure out every little problem that might come up. You deal with the problems on the fly sometimes. That's how it goes. But you got to take those first steps to make it happen. And most people just don't even understand how capable they are of thinking on their feet and solving problems as they go along. It's almost like once you make a commitment and you get into something, there's like it's like a river. There's a flow to it. You're caught in that flow. And as things come up on you, you learn to either navigate around them, or you learn to go through them. But for the most part, most people will do one or the other. The thing that messes you up is when you come up on a problem and you get paralyzed by it, and all you can focus on is the problem and not how to navigate around it or go through it. That's where you have a problem. But most people don't. Like, most people, once they're thrown in that situation, they know, okay, this is coming up. This is what do we have to do? And the best thing is once you get to the level where you have a team. And then you can surround yourself with good people that when something comes up, you say, hey, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And then it makes your own job a lot easier.
And the danger, like you said, is when it becomes a habit and you have a habit of not following through. And that's something I talk about with my own kids. And I say, look, you have to make setting goals and achieving them. Like even the small ones, you know, we had that book that, that's the Admiral, SEAL Admiral McRaven, who was my first commanding officer at SEAL Team 3, wrote a book about, and the whole thing was like, make your bed, because that small act of setting a goal for yourself and completing it every day is something you develop a habit of, and then it turns into bigger goals, bigger accomplishments, but you're developing that pattern of being able to set goals and achieve them and not just give up halfway through. And you and I have both had friends that something and just never finish it, and then they start something else and they never finish it. And you hit the nail on the head, brother, with the opportunity, because opportunities come around so they're just so scarce, and you have to seize on those opportunities.
Yeah,
and the
absolutely.
Time, we just don't have, our time is so limited and precious on this planet that you have to use it, and you got to start right fucking now, today.
Right.
Because.
Well, now you're talking about, the big picture, though, is appreciation of time.
Yeah.
That's the
yeah.
big picture, appreciating yeah. time and knowing and really knowing what your time is worth. There's, you know, running out of time is my worst fear. That's my biggest fear, is running out of time. I don't want to run out of time before I get to do everything that I wanted to do in my life. And that's why I move at the pace I do. That's why I take the, you know, I do the tour schedule that I do. That's why I'm out there constantly hitting the road hard. There's things I still want to accomplish within music that I'm still working towards. And I work towards them every single day. I make sure I do something small every single day. My wife and I had a major discussion yesterday I recently took a couple of tours in the support slot for other bands. And, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do is increase the crowd size in the States. And the only way I can do that is if I get in front of bigger crowds and pick up a couple of fans. But it can't necessarily be bands that are punk rock bands, because we're pulling pretty much from the same group of people. So we went out on tour with this one band, and I know we picked up a good amount of new fans because we sold a lot of merchandise on the nights that we played with them. That's how we gauge how much people really have liked the show, is by the amount of merchandise that we sell. So
yeah.
we played with a band. Most of the crowd was their crowd, but we still sold what we usually do. So we can say, hey, we definitely picked up some new fans. So we got another offer from them. It's going to really fill in my schedule. I'm going to be gone for most of the rest of this year, and which, of course, my wife is none too happy about. But she was questioning on why I would take a tour, a warm-up slot with another band when it doesn't pay anywhere near as much as it does when I play on my own. And I told her, I'm playing the long game.
Yep.
I'm 51 years old. I'm still playing the long game in music. You know what I mean? That I have a very long view of my life and my career, because there are definite things I want to accomplish, and I know how to get to them. I know, you know, what it's going to take to get there, and I do whatever it takes to get there. And that's always been my philosophy, is you can pretty much have whatever you want as long as you're willing to do what it takes to get there.
Yeah, I agree. And I talk about the long game in music. I just watched that Chicago documentary, and I mean, what those guys have been 60 years now. It's unbelievable.
Yep.
They're in it for the long game. But hey, brother, I appreciate you taking the time today, and just a fascinating perspective. And I know the audience is going to love it. And
cool. Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, CJ.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @SoftRep Radio.